Show me your teeth. Show me your teeth. Welcome to Vampire Hype, episode 46. Today, we will be discussing episodes 14 and 15 of The Vampire Diaries, No Exit, and Gone Girl. We missed a week. We're somehow a week behind. Let's just say scheduling hijinks are a really big pain in the butt.
Yes, they are.
But we are back, and we will be doing both episodes of Vampire Diaries, and then we'll be doing a catch-up episode for the originals and doing two episodes of that, so make sure to be on the lookout for that, too. You'll get that very, very soon. Today, I am joined by both Kyle, who you just heard, and Pamela. Hi, Pam.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Tired. But yay. We always record at 6 a.m. for those people who don't know when we record. So you guys are getting us at our prime.
6 a.m. Pacific Standard. It's 9 a.m. for us on the East Coast.
Yes, yes. So that's the only thing that sucks about living in California. You know, other than that.
It's all rainbows and sunshine besides that.
Supposedly.
We are going to jump right into the episode, but before we start, let's just mention how you guys can contact us to leave feedback, which we do read, I promise. I read all of it because I have an addiction to reading comments, which is bad. So you can find us on Twitter at twitter.com/vampirehype. You can email us at vampirehypepodcast@gmail.com, and you can comment on any TVD or originals article or the podcast post, and we'll see it there too. So make sure to let us know what you think, and we will definitely be checking all that stuff out. All right. Let's jump right into Vampire Diaries No Exit from 2 weeks ago. Let's start with favorite quotes. Pam?
Yes. So I picked one from like right at the end of the episode. Mine was just Catherine saying, "Bon bon, no need for goodbye. I'll see you on the flip side." And I don't know. If Catherine go out, I just liked that she went out like the sassy person she is. You know what I mean? Like, I just
Was that from Gone Girl?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was. I don't know. I just really enjoyed that scene. I just thought it was very Catherine-esque, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. So.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was watching it late at night. I just thought it was, like, the funniest thing in the world for her to call Bonnie Bon Bon, because Bonnie is, like, you know, the anti-ray of sunshine for the most part.
Yeah. All right. Kyle?
My favorite quote was from Stefan, and it's, "You're my brother. I'm not going to give up on you. I never will." It was just like, aw, yay, Damon and Stefan love. Gotta love it.
Just the brotherly love.
Right?
I'm all about the bromance.
It makes me wonder, though, if, like, if it was up to a decision between Elena or Damon who Stefan would pick.
So far they've always managed to find like a third option, but if it really came down to having to make that choice, it would be really interesting.
There needs to be like a split decision where like it's kind of like Family Guy, where like someone's like falling and like you have to grab them and you have to decide who to grab. I don't know why it's compared
I feel
to
like
Family
Stefan
Guy.
Would just like combust.
Yeah,
like,
he'd
I don't
be like, ah. He'd like pick no one and he'd explode.
Well, either exactly. That or Damon would look at him and say, "Save her," and kill himself.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Damon probably would. So
yeah.
There you go. We've solved the mystery.
My favorite is from Catherine, and she says, "Damon's spirals require a little more than an overnight bag." I just loved this Catherine Stefan road trip thing. Oh my god. I have not laughed so hard in a long, long time. And oh man, so great. And so this was just one of the many Catherine moments on this little road trip that had me in stitches. Alright, let's just dive in here. So the episode kind of begins with Damon and Enzo in this, like, random house. And so it gives us a really good chance to talk about their, like, friendship and what we think about it. Do you think that they're like buddies for life, or is Damon just kind of like using him to handle, to deal with this whole Elena breakup thing?
I think Damon is just kind of using him, because I feel like Damon has changed a lot since he met Enzo back in the, I believe it was like the 50s. And so I feel like the only reason he is with Enzo now is just because he's heartbroken, and it's giving him something to do. And like, he's like, well, if I don't have to be good for Elena anymore, then I might as well be bad with Enzo. Like, I don't think he's actually like that at all. So that's what.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you. I think he's spiraling, and he's just kind of doesn't know what to do. So might as well kill people with Enzo, because that's at least fun.
I love how that's Damon's MO. It's like, might as well kill people because I'm not doing anything else. No, but I totally agree with you guys. I almost kind of feel like he's just doing it because it feeds into the reason why he broke up with Elena in the first place, you know? So it's kind of like giving her a reason to hate him because he's on this bender, you know, just kind of to prove the fact that he really isn't good for her. So, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. And I mean, with the whole like Stefan Ripper storyline, and she like refused to leave him, like she was, you know, on his side the whole time and believed that he could come back. It makes me really curious to see what she thinks about Damon now that he's kind of Rippering. Like, would she stick by his side and say, you know, this isn't you, blah, blah, blah? Or would she like say, well, this might be you?
No, knowing Elena, she'd probably be like, no, this isn't you. I know you're different than this.
Yeah, but isn't the sad part that like we almost like aren't shocked by this behavior from Damon, because he tends to go on the, you know, it's like you're watching him like rip out throat after throat. You're just like, well, that's just Damon.
See, I'm always wondering what our editors think when like we have to write our recaps, and I'm just talking about like how Damon is like killing people, but it's like, it's no big deal. It's like, it's fine. And like, I'm wondering what like Danya or Karen are thinking when they have to edit this, and like, what is going on in this show?
It's like vampire shows, man. Bloody mess.
Exactly. That should be the catchphrase.
Yeah, just all kinds of death all the time. Yeah. Just used to it. After we saw Enzo kind of leave with Dr. West towards the end of this episode, and I'm wondering, do you guys think he's coming back again, or have we basically seen the end of Enzo? Because he kind of lost his luster halfway through this episode, and I don't know what they have planned for his character.
I'm so over Enzo, because he's going in a direction that I don't want anyone else to go in. Like, he's too much of the bad guy right now. So, maybe if he like lightens up and he stops being so murderous, I'd like him, but as for right now, I'm like, no, just get rid of Enzo, please.
Yeah, I can definitely like jump on board that train. Like, I'm just tired of like Enzo trying to make Damon into this like horrible, terrible version of himself, because he's made a lot of progress in the last couple of seasons. Like, we've seen a lot of character growth from Damon. So it's like, to see him take a step back and regress a little, it really just makes me sad. Moving on a little bit here. What does it say about Damon that despite all the hurt feelings and such, he still doesn't want Enzo to make that phone call and bring Elena and Stefan to the house? Like, he's on this Ripper thing, you know, he's doing things that Elena would find absolutely, you know, abhorrent, but he still is like, no, I don't want to hurt them. What do you guys think?
Well, just that goes to show how like changed he is, I think, like, and how like awesome and a friend and brother he is, and boyfriend that he is. I think it just goes to show that Damon Salvatore is pretty good. He's pretty awesome. He's pretty epic, and that's why he's my love from BuzzFeed.
Aww. Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, he Damon has like a hard shell, but really he's just got a soft, gooey center. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that.
If you were a piece of candy, he'd be, you know, hard shell, soft, gooey center. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's really nice that they didn't just, you know, when Stefan's like Ripper Stefan or whatever, it's, he doesn't really have that same like in between phase that Damon seems to have. So I liked that he was still very, very concerned about his brother and Elena, despite the craziness going on in his life. So when Enzo had Damon chained up to the chair, was anyone else getting major Mason Lockwood flashbacks?
No, because I totally forgot Mason Lockwood existed, so my bad.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he's sitting there chained to the chair, and I'm like, where's the fireplace poker? Like, somebody needs to find it, because holy crap, like, it just took me back to, what is that, season two?
Yeah.
Where... you with the Moonstone and Catherine, and I was like, holy cow, talk about a callback.
All the chains. They just like to chain all those boys up.
Oh, good times. Good times. So later on in the episode, the Travelers raise Enzo's blood acidity to stop Damon from feeding on him. And when they do this, was anybody else like weirded out? Did what
that
do you
was
think?
Just bizarre.
Yeah, like, do you think this is like a telling sign of them being the new baddie and that they have these really crazy powers, or do you think it was just like a plot device? Like, we're gonna use this; it's, you know, totally plausible, and then we'll move on.
I think it's just a plot device at this point. I think the Travelers are just a plot device for something bigger. I don't know what, but I just it. They actually look powerful in groups, but what's the thing about the Travelers is, like, if you pick them off one by one, it's like they're not going to be an issue. Like, they're only powerful if, like, they're all standing still and chanting. I mean, come on.
Just a good point. Like, they haven't really done very much. I mean, they've done these really random little creepy things, but for the most part, like, they just... are there, I think, to kind of help us understand Catherine's bit of this, like, her bit of the story. I still think that there's more to come with them. I think there's a lot of the Traveler way that we don't understand yet, that we haven't gotten, and that we're going to get that now that we're moving forward in the story after Gone Girl. Like, now we're moving into, like, the post-Catherine era. I think that the Travelers are going to kind of come back. We'll get a better explanation as to what they are.
I'm wondering if the Travelers had anything to do with Catherine going wherever the hell she went.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I mean, I wonder if that has something to do with it. We'll get to that. I'm sure we have a lot of feelings about the Catherine storyline and Gone Girl.
Yes,
we do. Yes, so many feelings. Then we kind of move on to later on in the episode when Catherine and Stefan arrive at the little shack, the little Damon and Enzo's little love shack. When they like are standing in the doorway, and clearly Damon doesn't want them inside, and Catherine just steps over the doorstep and enters the premises. Is anyone else like thinking what I'm thinking? Like, Stefan, why didn't you stop her? Like, come on. Do you really want her to just, like, die? Because he's really thirsty. Like,
yeah, well, I feel like he didn't... I don't know. I feel like he didn't know that she was going to do that. But he should have, like, stepped in there with her and, like, kind of, like, put himself in front of her so that Damon isn't like, oh my god, Elena. Yum. You know?
Tasty.
I really hope that's what went through his head, by the way.
I hope so. It just seemed like he didn't really pay any attention. I would have assumed that Elena is not going to just stand there and let him, you know, like, talk to her, yell at her. Like, she's going to do something stupid. Even Elena, not even being Catherine, I feel like she would do that. So if I were Stefan, I would not have let her just, like, walk in to basically her doom. Like, it just seemed like a really bad decision on his part, and it bugged me. Okay, speaking of Catherine and Stefan, let's get into their storyline from this episode a little bit. It kind of starts out with them studying at the house, which is random because they're actually studying. Anybody?
Oh, my goodness. I was like, what the heck? Like, you guys haven't focused on like, schoolwork in forever.
Yeah. Like, we're going to college so that we don't have to actually go to college, but we can have the college experience, and here they are studying. Random. But throughout that scene, we see Catherine, like, failing to keep up the Elena front. And it just kills me. How do you think Stefan can keep passing off all these little weirdnesses? Because he sees them. You can tell he sees them because we get a reaction. But then he dismisses them offhand.
Yeah, it just bugged me a lot, the fact that no one could tell. Like that, that entire, like, Catherine taking over Elena's body for good thing. Like, if it was any other circumstance, like, if it was Catherine taking over Elena's body, or, like, if it was Catherine pretending to be Elena under any other circumstance and not for, like, this whole, I'm going to take over your body permanently thing, everyone would have noticed in a heartbeat. It would have been solved in the same episode as it always was in the past. And so, like, the fact that it wasn't solved in, like, one episode just kind of annoyed me because it was so obvious and she was doing a really bad job at being Elena.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so too, because we've seen, like you said, we've seen the storyline before and they're able to get it right off the bat, specifically like people like Bonnie, you know what I mean? And you would just assume that they would just know. But I'm wondering if maybe they like tried to get away with it because she had kind of had like Matt on her side and Matt was like feeding her details, but even still she did slip up a lot, you know,
exactly.
And on purpose. I think that's more for like the audience, but you're right. It's kind of almost a disservice to these characters that have been able to figure out that it's Catherine before, but maybe they just were all like blinded by the fact that it's like, no, Catherine's dead. Like, duh, we saw her die.
Plus it's come to a point where like the last two episodes, she's done her hair Catherine style and not Elena style. And I don't know why anyone didn't realize that, like, oh wow, Elena suddenly got all like Catherine with her hair. Like,
it's sad that the girl's hair is a very defining characteristic, but it is. Like, Catherine has a very specific way of doing her hair that makes you know that's Catherine. So, yeah, it bugged me, too, because I was like, this is so not Elena style here. Like, come on, guys. She doesn't just change it that fast. Like, there's something about the two of them and how they style themselves that you can just kind of tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, this road trip, by the way, as I said before, absolutely hysterical. Her sabotaging the car and then rubbing the grease on her shirt. Like, how much more transparent can you be?
And how isn't it, like, I'm not a mechanic. I mean, don't get me wrong. But isn't it fairly obvious that someone just basically ripped that off of the car and it didn't just break on its own?
Like, come on, Stefan. Put it together. Come on.
He's the guy who's, like, studied cars since, like, the 1800s. I mean, come on, man.
Like, it just seemed really far-fetched that he wouldn't have suspected something. And then when she's acting incredibly transparent, like, I'm trying to get you to a motel. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge.
Oh, like, but, you know, it's like wish fulfillment. That's like she's his penguin. You know, like, he really wants to be with her. I don't know. I think he was just kind of hoping. But even then, like, it's like bad form, Stefan. Like, do you really want to be the rebound? She just broke up with Damon.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Then again, they're ping pong. She ping pongs.
Yeah,
so much
they're both the rebound at this point.
They're both the rebounds.
They've both been the rebound. They both will be the rebound. It just happens.
Exactly.
This is the trip problem with a Salvatore brother love triangle.
It's great because once you're done with one, you can rebound off the other one, and then when you're done with the rebound, you can go back to the other one.
This is a problem. Gotta love it. So then after we get the whole Damon interaction at the house, which is still weird in my opinion, Stefan brings Damon back to the Salvatore mansion and locks him in that infamous basement cell that we've used so many times now. I'm trying to think of who hasn't been locked in the basement cell. And I think, like, Bonnie. Maybe Jeremy. No, Bonnie, they locked Jeremy down there.
Bonnie's the... And Caroline. Wait, was Caroline trapped down there?
I don't remember.
I don't think so. I don't think Caroline or Bonnie have been trapped down there.
I think everybody else has at some point, though. Yeah. Like, all the originals and Elena and Damon and Stefan have each taken their turn. And right. It's
Tyler.
Just...
Tyler. Maybe yep. Caroline went in there with Tyler or something like that. That's why we're like...
Yeah. But it's just a kind of a rite of passage in Mystic Falls. Like, you have to spend an evening locked away in the subterranean.
You guys, I've had like dreams about that cellar. Like nightmares. Where I'm locked in there.
Oh, no.
If walls could talk, like the stories that cellar would have. Oh my god. So many great things. He locks him down there, and Damon points out to Stefan that Elena has completely given up on him. He reminds Stefan that, quote-unquote, Elena would never have done anything to avoid having to stay... She would have done anything to avoid having to stake Jesse back at Whitmore, but when Damon was feeding on her, she was trying to get Stefan to stake her, or to stake him. And the fact that she... like insinuated that Stefan should kill Damon, I feel like that should have been like a deciding factor right there that's not Elena. Like that just seems like a giant red flag to me. And it just bugged me that it took, you know, a few other things that happened in the episode to get Stefan to realize it. That was so out of character for her that I was really bothered by it.
I'm just going to pretend that basically every little plot line in this whole Catherine versus, like, taking over Elena thing didn't happen. I'm just going to be like, you know what? I'm going to not think about it. After this podcast, I'm just going to be like, nope, that was done. They were never that stupid. It's okay.
It's just so tough because this, in this moment, it was so important, like, for the story, because Damon really does feel like she's completely given up on him. And that, you know, for him has to be really, really traumatic. And then to find out probably, I don't know, what, 2 hours later or something in their time, that Stefan and Caroline have put together that it's not Elena and that it's Catherine. Like, what a twist to put on something like that. Like, poor Damon.
You know, like, I've realized that The Vampire Diaries normally is actually fairly free of plot holes. Or, like, if it's, like, if there are plot holes, there are, like, some, like, wide, like, crazy theories that you can put in to be like, okay, that plot hole's, like, covered. So, like, the fact that this season there are just so many huge plot holes, it's kind of upsetting to me. And it's making me, like, dislike this season more than the others, I feel. Like, is that just me? Like, am I the only one who thinks that Vampire Diaries is relatively free of plot holes?
Well, in the past, things that we thought were major plot holes ended up being something that was kind of, like, vital to the story. Like, the Elena blood drinking thing, like, from the blood bag, mm-hmm. when she couldn't do that. Like, we all were so... we were angry about it because we couldn't figure out why she wouldn't be able to drink from a blood bag. Like, that's so stupid. But it totally fit into the story later, and it worked out. So, like, it makes me think that things that are frustrating us now, that maybe there will be an answer for them later. I feel like there have been some instances in this season where they use it as a plot device, and they're moving on, and they're just going to hope that you didn't pay too much attention to it. But again, you never know when something's going to kind of pop back up in Vampire Diaries and have a legitimate explanation.
Do we know if Caroline Dries or Julie Plec have answered the question as to whether or not, or like as to why Bonnie never saw Catherine pass over to the other side? Like if that, like that plot hole is the biggest plot hole of all.
And not that I'm aware of. I don't think they've ever really talked about it. But based on the events of Gone Girl, maybe that has something to do with it, you know, where Catherine ended up. Maybe they're going to blame it on that.
It's sucky because, like, in Gone Girl, you see Catherine, like, after, like, she died, you see Catherine going up to her. And being like, okay, hey, Bonnie, let me pass through the other side. Like, that specific scene in itself should have happened when Catherine quote-unquote, died upstairs in the Salvatore mansion. So that's the part that bugs me the most. And I feel like if I have roundtables with Comic-Con at TVT, at Comic-Con with TVT, I'm just going to be like, so, Bonnie, is she just dumb? Or, like, what's going on?
It would definitely be an interesting question to see if they thought about it.
Yeah.
To see if it's something that they considered. I'm sure that if it was an actual plot hole and they just forgot about it, I'm sure they'll just pass it under the rug and give you a passing explanation about it and move on. But, I, you know, it's if they actually left it out for a reason, that would be really interesting to me.
And just so Bonnie fans don't hate me, I don't think Bonnie is dumb.
Oh, like, well, just... okay. Here, in defense of Bonnie, I want to point out that, especially this is like jumping ahead, and I know we're still on, we're not on Gone Girl yet, but she does kind of like you are meant to believe as a viewer. I feel like she knows a little bit more about the other side and how it works than you do, because when Catherine doesn't go through, she says, I don't know, but then she also says, it's not up to me. And that's kind of like, I think that clues you into the fact that, like, she doesn't make the decisions. Like, she's just the gatekeeper. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So yeah. She must know about other things. And I think in that sense, you could consider it, like, not necessarily a plot hole, just something that they'll be playing with later. Maybe, hopefully, if they don't bring it up again in the next couple, like, episodes, then I'll consider it a plot hole. But I think as a viewer, you are meant to believe that we don't know everything about how passing over works. Just yet.
Yeah. And I love that Bonnie is so integral to the story in that regards, and to like, she's very important is to figure out what happened to Catherine or like what's going on or like who it is up to. And I like that. I'm actually liking Bonnie a lot more this season than I have in the past, in the end of this season.
I had some downright like fangirl feelings for Bonnie in the next episode. So, you know, Bonnie's looking up, man. I'm really enjoying her, and I hope she gets a like more substantial storyline coming up, because I really, really do like her. Okay, moving on. We do have some Tyler Caroline interaction in No Exit. Mostly bickering and fighting. And based on that, what do you guys think? Ultimately, do you want them to reconcile and to get back together? To just kind of be friends and, you know, handle their business? To stay broken up and be civil, or to just never speak again and not talk?
I want them to be, like, friends, and I don't want them to get together, because I ship Carolouse like the entire thing, or Caroline, or whatever the hell you call it. But the only thing that kind of worries me about the whole Klaus Caroline thing is that if Klaus ever dies, he's totally screwed if Catherine is screwed. And so, like, I don't want Caroline to end up with someone that she can't hang with on the other side. Like,
that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
That is really adorable.
It's so true. I'm with you. I'm like so over Tyler. I'm just like, go away and let Caroline and Klaus be a thing. But at the same time, like, Caroline won't even let Caroline and Klaus be a thing. So maybe it's just a moot point.
It's, yeah, there's definitely more to come with that storyline. I know this is not the end of the Klaus Caroline thing, so I'm sure we'll get more juicy moments from the two of them. But I'm with you guys. I don't hate Tyler. I just want him to move on and to just say, you know, she did this, I can't handle it, which is why I can never be with her again, and just go be Matt's bro and like have them broing out all the time, because I really did enjoy the two of them like being good friends and hanging out earlier this season. Like, I would love to have that more.
Yeah, and like Matt looks so happy, you know what I mean, just to have his friend back, and I was like, oh, that's good. Matt's really grown on me in the last like two seasons. Yeah. Really, you know, and so I think he deserves some kind of semblance of happiness, because usually he's just there to do everyone else's bidding. So it's nice for him to have, you know, friend back and stuff.
Yeah. The last little thread of plot that kind of weaves through this episode was between Nadia and Matt. And it starts out when Catherine kind of tells Nadia to kill Matt because he's basically a loose end and she just wants to wrap it up. And Nadia refuses to do it. Do you think it was because Nadia had feelings for Matt, or was it just her, like, unwilling to just kill for the sake of killing?
Oh, she totally has feelings for Matt. Like, totally. She's, like, in love.
See, I totally thought it was just, like, she didn't really want to kill people just to kill people. Like, she's not Catherine. And she's trying to prove she's not. You know what I mean? Because Catherine will kill whatever human, especially.
I don't know. She killed her traveler partner.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Interesting. Yeah. Nadia is kind of a loose end. Like, you don't really know what she's thinking. She's not a character we know very well. So it's just kind of interesting. We then kind of move into the, I call it the kissing scene. Because Matt is kind of an evil genius, and I loved it. I loved that Matt got a moment to kind of be the smart one, and he kind of uses Nadia's attraction to him against her and gets out, like, three very short syllables or whatever in a text message, and it's, like, the deciding factor for what tips Caroline and Stefan off in a couple of minutes.
I just love that they could be like, help Kay. Kay, Catherine. Oh my God.
Well, I was glad they put that together. Yeah. Like, you know, in other shows they would have glossed it over, but there's not that many Kay names hanging out, and, you know, Cole is dead. So
that's it.
Yeah, like, it totally makes sense that they would try and figure out who it is, and of course it's Catherine. But I just, you know, I really liked that Matt is finally, like, he has some agency. He's not just the passive guy who's being tortured and used and whatever. Like, he got in the thick of it and is, you know, helping now. And I really, really loved that.
I completely agree.
Yeah. Just loving Matt. Just love. Gotta love it. We also should point out that during that whole, like, just after that whole Nadia scene with the text message, Nadia gets bitten by Tyler in a little scuffle between her and Caroline and Tyler. And I have to admit, I feel really guilty about this. I got really excited when she got bitten because I thought it meant Klaus was coming back. Oh. Every time somebody gets bitten by a werewolf on the show, every time, I think, does that mean Klaus is coming back?
I feel like they just need, like, a couple vials of Klaus's blood in, like, an emergency case, just in case.
Yeah,
like,
on hand.
In case of werewolf bright glass.
I'm actually surprised they haven't been able to negotiate that, to be honest. Especially with, like, I feel like Damon is always the one that ends up needing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
especially with Tyler around. Like, come on.
Yeah, they really, really should have a vampire first aid kit. And it should have the werewolf venom antidote in a little vial so that they have something on hand to help out in these situations. This brings us to the last moment of the episode, the Eureka moment, as I've been calling it, where Caroline and Stefan put the pieces together and figure out that Catherine has been inhabiting Elena's body, and we all take a collective sigh. Anything you guys want to talk about this moment, or should we just move on?
It was like two episodes coming, and I was just like, okay, good. It's finally here. Now we could move on. Like, fantastic.
Basically, yeah. Like, we've been anxiously awaiting them putting it together, and I liked that it was Caroline and Stefan that did. I like their little, like, sleuthing business that they seem to have. They figured out the sire bond. Now they figured out that, you know, Catherine was using Elena. Like, it's kind of fun. I like their friendship, and I like them being the problem solvers. I think it's really fun. Alrighty. We shall move on. Before we dive right into Gone Girl, we each took a little BuzzFeed quiz about, what was it technically titled? Which Salvatore brother from the Vampire Diaries would you end up with? And predictably, we all got the same result. And I think we were all happy about it.
Oh, yeah.
But we wanted to just kind of point it out because these little quizzes have been so much fun lately. They've been making the rounds for every fandom from Boy Meets World to, you know, Buffy and Whedon and all of that craziness. So if you guys want to check it out, we will link to it in the show notes. And, you know, make sure to let us know which Salvatore brother you would end up with. We all ended up with Damon. Shocker. But we were all very, very happy about it. So.
I feel like that says something about us. I don't know what.
That we're all secretly evil.
Yeah.
We're all bloodthirsty.
I don't know. We're all bad boys with a heart of gold.
Dark and broody. With really awkward.
Although to be fair, and all of you guys listening that do take these random BuzzFeed quizzes, it's like a black hole. You get sucked into the vortex. But I mean, it's really hard to kind of sway in most situations. It's hard to sway the results. So like this one was like, even like right off the bat, it's like, what kind of food do you prefer?
Exactly. And like pick
it's
a
not
song
like there's a it's not like there's a an option for like the blood of like wriggling writing.
Well, and it's not like they gave you really obvious hints like blood oranges and like,
or like moonstones. Like, where would you hide a moonstone? In a soap thing.
Exactly. Yeah, where would you hide your white oak steak? In the firewood pile. No. It's really general questions, so it's harder to trick it to give you the answer you want. So I think it's good fun. All right. As we start Gone Girl, did anyone have any favorite quotes? I know we already had Pam's. Kyle, how about you?
So my favorite quote from Gone Girl is from Nadia when she kind of starts like losing her mind a little bit and not realizing who she's talking to. And she's talking to Catherine and she's describing Catherine to her mom, to Catherine. She's like, she's a liar and a murderer. She manipulates. She betrays. She'll do anything to survive. And Catherine's just like heartbroken. I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's so accurate a description, but it just sucks that Catherine has to hear this from her daughter, like when she's dying. So many feels.
I have to say, during that whole little like speech of Nadia's where she cannot like connect that her mother is sitting in front of her, I couldn't help but feel like there was something else going on. Like, it wasn't just her telling someone she lies, she betrays. Like, it almost seemed like Nadia was kind of like proud of Catherine and that, yeah, she manipulates, she lies, she betrays, but she survived. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It was kind of almost a callback to the Catherine is not completely horrible because she's been trying to survive for 500 years and has been on the run from Klaus and managed to do it. Like, back, you know, in season 3, they were kind of marveled at the fact that Catherine has managed to not be killed by Klaus. And so I thought it was just a nice little nod to that. Like, it didn't seem like she was horrified by the fact that her mother has done all of these terrible things.
Yeah, it's definitely less like, oh, she's so evil, and more like, this is my mom. You better help me out, because she's a pretty evil bitch, so.
Right, yeah. It was just a really great moment, though, between them. It was really sad. My quote is a little bit funnier. it was between Stefan and Damon, where Stefan is talking to Damon about like the amount of blood he's giving him to drink, and he says, Caroline did a little bit of math. And Damon says, Caroline? And Stefan says, relax, she had a calculator.
I love that quote so much.
I just loved it. It's so great. And it just, the Caroline, you know, ditzy blonde thing, we've disproven that a million times. But the fact that Damon still plays on it makes me giggle.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, because she's awesome. And we don't have to tell you that. Caroline's amazing and everyone knows it. All right, let's jump right on in here. The episode kind of starts with Nadia suffering from the werewolf bite, and I couldn't help but just kind of think about how werewolf venom has helped to tell the story so well in the show. Like, think back to all the times we've used werewolf venom to give us flashbacks and to kind of get us into the characters' heads. It's a really effective tool.
Yeah, that's true. I never realized that, but you're absolutely correct. Because without that, then they wouldn't be, like, reimagining their past, and we wouldn't be, like, getting into their heads.
Yeah, like, yeah. We got it with Rose, and we had some with Damon, and we had it with Catherine, and now with Nadia. Like, and there's a lot of backstory that we've gotten from Werewolf Bites.
I wish the backstory that they had hit upon in the show, and maybe they hit upon it, and I completely, like, ignored it somehow, but I want to know how Nadia turned into a vampire at such a young age, and how she knew that her mother was a vampire and was running away. Like, I just, like, they didn't talk about any of that, and so that kind of upset me a little bit. Like, it just jumped into Nadia's memories in, like, 1570-something when she was looking for her mother, and she was already, like, the current age she is now, you know?
Like, that is a really good point. Like, we don't know how Nadia ended up as a vampire. Like,
exactly. We don't know who turned her. We don't know who told her about Catherine being a vampire. We don't know who told her that Catherine was alive and that she was on the run. Like, we don't know any of that. And I don't know if they're saving that for later or if that's just kind of the end of the whole Nadia Catherine storyline, like, once and for all.
Well, that makes me wonder if maybe it has something to do with the travelers, because we know that Nadia and Catherine are both travelers, that maybe at some point they kind of take Nadia under their wing and start telling her about all of this. And when she finds out about her traveler ancestry, she thinks, I can find my mom and then, you know, becomes a vampire so that she has the time to do it. Like, that makes me really interested in the rest of this traveler storyline, because that may provide some answers.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I hope we get some of that. I know that with Nadia gone and Catherine gone, that it's probably moot point. Like, we're probably not going to get very much, but it would be nice to get a throwback. And who knows, maybe the baddie is involved with them, and maybe we will get more. We shall find out. So we then find out that Catherine has enlisted Dr. West to help heal Nadia without having to call Klaus, because she doesn't want to and she doesn't think he'll help her anyway, which is probably true. So she calls Dr. West, and he comes in and takes a sample of Nadia's blood and is going to concoct an antidote for the werewolf venom. Did you think it was kind of naive of Catherine to just believe him?
Yeah. I don't know if I was... Like, that's a good point. Now I think it was a little naive, but at the time I was just like, man, Dr. West is going to come up with, like, a werewolf venom, like, cure now and not when Rose was alive. Come on. Like,
where were you?
Yeah.
Four seasons ago.
Exactly. Seriously. Like, this entire time, all I kept thinking about was Rose, and I just, like, it, like, killed me to the core.
Yeah, and the fact that he's taking a blood sample and leaving them, like, how did she not think he's going to use this werewolf venom and everything in her blood? Like, he's going
to
use that.
Like, it comes to, like, her believing that she thinks, like, she's there for her daughter, so that's what she's worried about most. So, like, that's why she just wants to believe that he'll help her, because she has no other options at this point, so she's just kind of, like, believing what she can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like,
I was just going to say, like, at this point, she has, like, nothing left to lose. Because, like, Catherine doesn't really care about, like, other people suffering because Dr. West suddenly has this blood sample. I think she's just like, well, if he fixes her, he fixes her. And if not, like, she was going to die anyway, you know? But she had to try.
Yeah, no, for sure. It just seems silly. It was almost a little unnerving for me, just because Catherine is, if one thing, she's not naive at all. But it totally makes sense in this instance, because she is trying to save her daughter, and she doesn't really have a whole ton of other ways to do so. Like, it's either Klaus or trying to find another way, so that totally makes sense. We also got to see Caroline telling everyone their big deduction from last episode about Catherine being in Elena's body. And we got this wonderful little scene of them all freaking out over it. But this is not the first time Catherine has pretended to be Elena. So why do you think they all were so incredibly bothered?
I think because They were bothered because it took them such a long time. Like, they were basically the fandom at this point. They were, like, an embodiment of the fandom going, what the hell? What's wrong with us? We're idiots. Like we should have realized this, like, days ago. So I feel like that's why this time they're, like, before it was, like, a matter of, like, a couple of hours until they figure it out. Maybe a day. And this time it took them a couple of days, if not, like, a week or so. And so they're just like, well, what the hell? Like, we're dumb. And it makes them think that they're not as good friends maybe to Elena, or like they're not as good people as they thought they were.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Jeremy's little contribution to this when he said, you know, she saved me. Like, Catherine would never do that. And Bonnie was like, yeah, but if she's Elena, she definitely would, you know. Like, they really made it clear that there were things that made that convinced them above and beyond everything else, so they just passed the rest of it off as weird Elena stuff, which is, you know, commendable. At least they tried to kind of cover their tracks. We also saw Damon's reaction to the news. And what did you guys think of this little scene between Stefan and Damon?
Oh, it was great. I loved it when Stefan came in to tell him what was going on, and Damon's just like, oh, she's brilliant. Like they can realize that Catherine is actually fairly smart, and just, I love how he's just like, why are you telling me this when I'm stuck in a cave, and you're telling me that the reasons that I did all this is for nothing? It was all for Catherine. Like, I love that whole, like, interaction. It was perfect.
Yeah, I love a good Stefan Damon moment, and you can see the panic on Damon's face, like, holy shit, I've done all of this stuff, and she's never gonna forgive me, and oh my god, like, I really hope that somehow we get a conversation between them where he says, listen, you know, I thought you were done, like, I thought there was no way I was getting you back, like, don't hate me for all the stuff I did. But we'll see, I'm sure. That will definitely be something that's not going to be dropped, that's for sure. We then get... They don't really show us them making the plan, but we get to see the plan to lure Catherine back to the Salvatore Mansion in action. And I'm sorry, worst plan ever. What did you guys think?
Oh, you mean the plan? We're like, hey, we're going to have a surprise party for Bonnie. Come over. Or like... That plan?
Yeah. Like, come on, guys. This is Catherine. Like, you're going to have to get up earlier to trick her.
And, like, they're all calling her within, like, a 5-minute period. It's, like, one after the other after the other. Like, it's a little obvious that something's going on.
More importantly, like, hostility over the phone. Because, like, Bonnie is not having it in that conversation.
Oh my goodness.
You know, Catherine's like, oh, I'm buying you a spa certificate. Bonnie's like, yeah, okay, cool. I'm so excited for you to come over. It's like very, it's very deadpan, like, because she's just not amused.
Oh. Yeah, definitely hilarious. It was a great moment for that, but not so effective on the getting Catherine where you need her to be bandwagon, whatever. So Catherine then calls Damon and basically is trying to get a feeling for what is going on. She's trying to, you know, solidify her stance on the whole thing. And I think her plan was equally as terrible. Like, Damon's not an idiot either. He's going to put it together.
Yep. It was like the whole planning thing on this part. Like, they know each other too well, but they also don't realize how the other person knows them so well. So they're just like, oh, I'm just going to do this. And, like, I just loved at the end of, like, right before that first commercial break, it's like, Damon knows that Catherine knows that they know that she knows. Like, it's just like...
Yeah. Oh, telephone. Yeah, no, it was just really funny. And it's nice to get those little moments because there's so much crazy going on, especially right now. So that was really good, really good fun. We also got a scene with Liz and Jeremy and Bonnie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's basically my reaction, too. Was this or was it not the easiest way to make us all Team Bonnie in a single moment?
Oh, yeah.
Like, poor thing. This girl.
Are they not dating?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they're dating.
They're dating, but, like, aren't they, like, are they not, like, public about this? I mean, come on. I feel like Bonnie could have just been like, girl, that's my boyfriend. Back off.
Like, we just made out on that bench over there. In case you didn't see, do you want me to show you again? Like, get away from my man. Yeah, it's just, and Jeremy's, like, passiveness to the whole thing. It's like, hello, excuse you.
Exactly. That's why it made me think, like, they're not public together, because he never said anything. Like, I was like, come on. And, like, I love how, like, she's all touching his hand, and Bonnie's like, that's not how I taught you to do that. She's like, relax, I'm doing my thing. Gotta, like, get a feel. Like, literally.
Right. It's just so awkward, and it's like,
oh my goodness.
I don't know who this Liz character is. I don't know if she's sticking around or if we're just using her for her witchy abilities, but she needs to back off Jeremy.
Right
now. Just a great, great scene. Love it. We also, well, this is what I like to call further proof that Tyler is useless and stupid, even though I really do have an affinity for Tyler. I do like him. He had to have seen through what Damon was doing in the basement. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, Tyler's like,
do you need a lesson in Damon luring you to get what you want? Like, all he wants is blood right now.
Like, how many times has a vampire been stuck in that cellar and tried to, like, anger someone into coming in there? Like, come on.
I really think this is just like Tyler being a little cocky. You know what I mean? It's like he goes down, like he knows what Damon wants, but it's more like, oh, like I'm Tyler, like he's not gonna catch me. But it's
big,
like,
fat hyper.
That's what you get for being stupid, you know.
They need like directions on the wall, on the door to the cellar, like, in case vampire is hidden in the cellar, do not engage, do not go into the cellar under any circumstance.
I thought you were going to say, caution, don't feed the vampire. Don't feed the prisoner.
Yes.
All food must stay within, you know, 20 yards away from said door. Yeah. No. It was, you know, classic Damon, you know, saying whatever he needs to get what he wants. And it worked on Tyler. Totally weird, though, that we got, like, this little Tyler-Damon moment. I feel like those are two characters we never see interact. Yeah?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty interesting. It's nice seeing Tyler kind of going and making the rounds and interacting with everyone else. I'm in the hopes that Tyler is redeeming himself, and slowly he is, like, slowly but surely. I'm still, like, upset with him, but still, like, it was nice seeing him with Damon. I agree.
Yeah. So it's just a little change of pace, because we don't see that very often. We then kind of move into Damon, and he killed Wes in this episode. We saw him doing his little surgery thing. Like, he kind of used the scalpel and tortured him a little bit, which, considering what Dr. Wes did to him, is kind of hard to blame him for, but it's still gross.
No, can I just say that when that was happening, and he decided to, like, gouge out his eye with a thing, I made an audible, like, oh my god, like, that freaked me out a lot.
Yeah, it seemed a little dark even for Damon.
It was very, like, almost like R-rated for the Vampire Diaries. Like, it was very, like, it was very American Horror Story is what that was.
Yeah, and it's just a something we haven't really seen. I mean, yeah, he kills people, whatever, but it just seemed really, really dark for his character, and I'm sure it's not a precursor for anything, but it just was a really, it hurt my heart for both of them. For Dr. Wes and Damon.
I know, and it basically means that the entire Whitmore line is now done for good.
Yep.
Which hopefully means the whole Augustine Society is done then.
Yeah, it seems like it is now. Like, that we're not going to be getting any more of that storyline. Considering what we know now, about the end of the episode and what Catherine did. Do you think that this, I mean, we know that it was kind of premature of him to just kill Wes, but do we think that there's going to be some sort of cure, or are they going to like use Klaus's blood maybe to, you know, help Elena like with the venom part
it
of
was, it was a lab created virus. Therefore, I feel like there should be a lab created antidote.
Yeah, but since it's like, you know, it's made of, you know, who knows, but werewolf venom is an additional, you know, part of the virus. So would Klaus's blood still work as the antidote to the werewolf venom? Or because it's wrapped up in this virus, is Elena pretty much screwed?
I don't know. I feel like if anything, if Klaus's blood does help, it would only be for Elena. Because Damon's virus doesn't have any werewolf blood in it.
Right.
So that would be very, I don't know. I don't like that they're infected now. It's, my heart, it's getting ripped apart. Oh, that rhymed.
Oh, well, you're a poet and you didn't even know it. yeah, so I'm sure we'll be getting more of this. I mean, that's probably going to be the focus of next episode. So there's a lot of answers to come, I'm sure. But it was just an interesting question to think about. We then see Catherine discovering Wes's body and what that means for the end of the episode. I broke down a little bit when she kind of put the pieces together. I felt so bad for Catherine.
Oh, I know. Poor thing was just trying to save her daughter. Like, for the first time in her life, she's being 100% selfless, and she can't save her daughter.
Yeah, it's just so, there's a finally someone that she's willing to put it all on the line for, and there's nothing she can do. It's just, oh, it's so beautiful. So then we see Stefan laying down the law, and he issues the ultimatum, kind of an ultimatum, telling Catherine that she has to, you know, she can either run or she can come back and be with her daughter in her final moments, and that it's up to her and she has to make the decision. Do you guys think that Elena, or that Catherine impersonating Elena, was just like the final straw for Stefan? Because he seemed to really be understanding Catherine up until the end of 500 Years of Solitude, where she, you know, took over Elena's body. Was this just the last thing that he couldn't take anymore?
Yeah, I definitely think so, especially since he's the one that stabbed her. I think this was just basically like 500 years of him just being, you know what, I'm done. I am literally done. You're dead to me, literally. because before, when Catherine was on her deathbed, it was her aging and her kind of like finally the years catching up with her, and she was starting to redeem herself, and she was like apologizing, and she was just kind of like, she had nothing to do, like it was out of her control, and Stefan felt bad for her. And the thing about the Vampire Diaries is that almost all these characters are willing to accept the characters for who they are, and they're able to redeem themselves in the other characters' eyes. And then that was that point for Catherine. Like, Catherine redeemed herself in Stefan's eyes and in Elena's eyes, and like not Damon's, or maybe the rest of the group, but both Elena and Stefan were like, you know what, you're okay, I forgive you, I know you've done some pretty bad things, but you've had a pretty bad life, and it's okay. But after that, where they've already forgiven her completely, and she goes and does this thing where it's, like, permanently taking over Elena's body and, like, changing all of their lives forever for her, the sake of her living, I feel like that was the last straw. Like, she could have done maybe 100 other things that didn't involve trying to take over Elena's body completely, and they'd probably be like, well, it's Catherine. But because it messed with their lives and with Elena's lives specifically from season one, that's the only life they cared about. It was Elena. And like, that's the main center of the entire show. I feel like because of that, that's why Seven's like, you know what? I'm done. And that's why all the characters are basically done with Catherine. It's why we should be done with Catherine, but we're really not.
We all just care too much.
That was Catherine. A huge rant. I apologize.
No, it was good. I it was very well put. I think that's exactly what's going through everybody's heads, and particularly Stefan's. I think he's just had enough, and it's time to move on. Moving on, we got Nadia's death scene. Like she starts, she's been, you know, suffering from this venom, whatever, but she's kind of starting to move into the final stages of it. And we get this really beautiful moment between her and Matt, where Matt pretends to be Gregor, and Nadia is talking to him because she thinks it's, you know, it's Gregor sitting in front of her, not Matt. And she basically, you know, is begging for forgiveness, and Matt just forgives her and gives her that peace of mind. And I just loved everything about this moment.
Like the entire scene was heartbreaking. And I gotta admit, I teared up. I teared up quite a bit. I wasn't like bawling, but like, I was like, oh my God, this is like one of the saddest moments. This was like almost on par with Bonnery's funeral, for goodness sake. Like, it was so sad.
Yeah, it's just a really sweet thing of Matt, for Matt to do. And this from someone who's, you know, stabbed him in the back a couple of times here. But ultimately, I think him and Nadia kind of understood each other. And so it's just really, really sweet of him to give her that peace of mind and the absolution that she's looking for. We kind of already went into the Catherine Nadia aspect of this with the, you know, she's evil, she manipulates, she betrays. But the Catherine part of her death was so beautiful as well. Like, it was really nice send off for both of these characters, since apparently they are both gone and we are not going to get anything more from them. What did you guys think? Did you really like it as a final moment for them?
Yeah. I just really liked that it showed a really nice character growth for Catherine, because as we've been discussing, this whole journey has kind of been about her realizing that there is someone worth putting in front of herself. And so this was just kind of like the proverbial, like, no pun intended, but like nail on the coffin, you know, just to see how she really has grown to be compassionate about another life other than her own. And it was a very beautiful scene. So,
you know, including the vision,
you know, maybe, I know we got memories and stuff from Nadia, like in this episode, but I'm wondering, like, in the very beginning, I should have thought of this before. Like, I wonder how Catherine decided to trust that Nadia was her daughter and she wasn't just a vampire going like, I'm your daughter. Like,
I think Catherine was, like, depending on her gut. Like, Catherine's kind of trusted herself over all those years. She knows when something doesn't feel right. And I think she believed Nadia. Like, I think it just, this is her daughter. It felt right. There's, you know, if she really thought she was being played, Catherine never would have allowed it to just kind of go on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we ever really got proof that she was her mother. I think we did, but I can't put my finger on exactly the moment. Catherine's, she's if there's one thing she's not, it's naive. She's going to look into things if she really feels like there's something going on. We then get this little thing with Matt refusing to just bury her body. Where were they going to put it? Just in the woods? Does anyone think that this could possibly be significant later? That Matt knows where Nadia is buried and no one else does? Question mark?
I don't know. I feel like it's a very hard question, because I feel like the Nadia storyline is kind of like over. But the fact that they didn't show where he buried her is kind of questionable at this point.
Well, and they made a point of, you know, of pointing out that Matt was going to take her body and take care of it and give her like a proper burial place. Like, he wasn't just going to bury her in the woods like all of the other random vampires they've killed over the years. Like, he wanted to do better for her, which is totally in character for him. So if that's the only reason they did it, you know, I understand. But it also felt like there was a reason that Matt is the one taking her away and burying her body. Like, it almost felt like they were heavily hinting that this could be important later. I'm sure if it is, we'll definitely find out. But
if it is, we can be like, oh, you called it.
Yeah, we called it right here. Yeah, so it's just a quick little thing that stuck out.
I have to say that when Nadia was dead and like she was lying on the couch and like Catherine got stabbed and she fell and she like pulled the blanket off of Nadia and like she passed out and it was just a shot of Nadia on the couch and Catherine like basically Catherine dead and Elena almost coming back, like that was like so beautiful, like just the shot of mother and daughter. I was just like, oh my goodness,
like one final shot of mm-hmm. the book. Yeah, it was really, really well done. They did a really great job in this episode with sending these two characters off. Prior to Catherine's collapsing and being stabbed by the traveler knife, we got Catherine's goodbye scene, which was definitely in pure Catherine style, really funny and snarky and witty. I thought her like message to Damon was really telling. Like, just, you know, her attitude toward him, we know their history. And just, you know, like, him saying, like, see you in hell, Catherine. Like they kind of...
But sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine.
I loved that whole speech she gave Damon. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry I turned you into a vampire. I'm sorry that I made your life better. And that you didn't die on a battlefield, but you are still alive, and that you've lived for passion, and you're compassionate, and, like, I'm sorry for doing all of those things to you. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you have such a good point, and it was beautiful, and I loved it. Because, honestly, yeah. Without Catherine, like, I feel like they fail to realize that without Catherine, none of this would be happening. Like, not a single one of things would be happening without Catherine. Mm. So
she kind of said the same thing to Caroline too. She's just like, I made you better, don't lie, you know. Yeah. It's like
just true,
but it's true.
I feel like they just, I don't know, they're so caught up in like their anger with Catherine, which is like understandable, but like they fail to realize that like she's the catalyst for what happened in the entire show. And I feel like they should just be like, well, at least she did give us this. And even if our lives are completely and totally screwed beyond recognition, like, at least we're alive, you know?
Yeah, and they wouldn't have known the Salvatore brothers at all had it not been for Catherine, because they wouldn't have been there.
And, like, Elena and Caroline's lives would be, like, cheerleading and Matt and boys, which is just not as interesting as vampires and werewolves and witches.
In the alternate universe where Elena and Matt got married.
Yeah.
And Bonnie dyed her hair red or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Just weird. So we also got this little short little scene between Stefan and Damon. They're waiting for Elena to wake up. And we got this right before the Caroline and Catherine moments. So it was really, really short. But Damon basically tells Stefan that he's not going to try and cover up what he did while Elena was not present. He's going to tell her the truth, and he's just basically going to beg for forgiveness. And it just is such a beautiful character moment for him, because he has come so far. Previously, Damon would have just glossed it over and not said anything, and then when Elena finally asked about Aaron, he probably would have passed it off as Aaron died. Or Aaron's dead, or, you know, I don't think he would have necessarily, like, taken responsibility, but he really seems to be ready to say, I did this, this was me, let's see if we can move on from here.
I love that. I think that's going to help Elena kind of, like, accept what he did, because he's not lying about it. He's, like, being honest, and she's going to realize that, like, he's trying to be a better person, not just because... like, for Elena, but he's also just trying to be a better person in general. Because he knows that he could lie to Elena, and he could just not tell her the truth. But the fact that he's going to try and attempt to, like, tell her everything is a testament to how he's changed as a person.
Yeah. Well, just
also, I was going to say ahead. Also Elena would just, she'll take it in stride and she'll be like, oh, we can fix it together. Yeah. You know mm-hmm. how she is. So it's like, it does benefit him. I mean, be honest.
She was willing to like completely accept the fact that Damon has been killing a line of family members for like the entirety of the time they've been dating. Like he's been running off and killing people without telling her. So like she got over that pretty quick. So I'm pretty, she can get over anything.
Well, and now that they're both going to be in the same boat with this whole Ripper virus thing, I'm sure it's going to be something that she kind of pushes under the rug until they can figure out how to save them. So we'll probably get a short little thing next episode, you know, where they kind of confront the issue and then it gets pushed under the rug because there's so much more to deal with. So, you know, that there's sure to be an interesting convo between the two of them. There's also a lovely interaction between Caroline and Tyler towards the end of this episode where she just calls him out. And I loved every second of this scene.
It was fantastic.
Just, he's been giving her such grief about, you know, her sleeping with Klaus. And yeah, she is not exactly proud of herself for it either. You know, she's not exactly, she doesn't exactly think it was the greatest decision on earth, but she had to do it. It was, you know, you can tell she doesn't want to apologize for it anymore. Like, she wants people to just accept it and move on. And I love that the you bit Nadia and killed her, and yet we're still talking about this.
It's like, she brings up such a freaking, like, good point. Like, someone just died because of his werewolf bite, and literally, like, no one bats an eyelash. Maybe not literally, but, like, no one cares. Like, no one notices. But, like, her having sex with Klaus is somehow so, like, a big deal, even though it happened 2 weeks ago, and it hasn't mortally affected a single person. And so, like, she makes such good points. And she's, like, it's another embodiment of fandom, I think. It, like, the show realizes that people basically, like, hate Tyler at this point. And so, like, they take Caroline as this tool against Tyler and like as a voice of the fandom against him and be like, listen, like I know I did some bad things, but everyone here has done bad things and you need to either shut the hell up about it or get out of my life. And it was amazing. It was perfect. And I feel like it's going to help the fandom actually learn to grow and love Tyler more, because if Caroline can say this and get this vented to him, then it's going to be great.
Agreed. On all counts.
Jesus, I rant so much in this episode.
Hey, no, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. No apology necessary. The last scene in this episode, well, pretty much the last scene, had Catherine and Bonnie in the church where Nadia and Catherine had kind of hung out earlier in the episode. And Catherine tells Bonnie about the whole stabbing Elena's body with the new virus thing, which is the quote-unquote secret that Bonnie uncovers that we've all been trying to figure out from the synopsis. I'm so glad that we have a new hurdle, something different to kind of focus on.
You think that the other thing would be the big secret, but apparently not.
No, I'm pretty sure, definitely the Ripper virus. And then Catherine tries to pass on, and when she, you know, grabs a hold of Bonnie to pass through the anchor, nothing happens. And definitely unexpected, I did not see this coming at all.
No one did. Nope.
There's just no way. So when she can't pass through, Bonnie, you know, kind of says, it's not up to me. And this question has the fandom in a tizzy because no one knows who it's up to.
Yeah, Catherine's like, well, then who is it up to? And then the second she says that, like, wind starts blowing, the doors get blown open, and she gets freaking sucked into the sky.
Not even into the sky. Like, we don't even know where she got sucked into.
It was just black oblivion. Right. Like, you couldn't see anything out those doors. It was just black.
Yeah.
So, does anyone have a guess as to where Catherine is? Are we just supposed to think it's some sort of void?
I have no idea, but let me read something that executive producer Caroline Dries says. So it's she makes a good point, and she's like, it's unlike anything we've seen before. We've seen characters appear to Bonnie and the Anchor, and when Catherine died, that didn't happen. She's ripped out of Bonnie's arm and sucked into wherever by some dark void. We won't say it's anything religious like heaven or hell, but that's the implication. She's going to a dark world. And, like, if you're wondering if you're ever going to see Catherine ever again, the answer is no. Because she says, I don't think we'll explore it so much as in the future. We'll use something similar like that happening on the other side, where it becomes a bit of a disarray over there and people get sucked into oblivion. But what we wanted when we were writing the Catherine storyline is to really deliver on her as a character. It's the show is known for bringing people back to the dead, so death didn't ever feel final. They can hop over from the other side whenever we feel desperate. So we wanted to say, no, she's gone. That's it.
Ugh.
I'm okay with her being gone, but I'm not okay with this whole, like, oh, like, this is probably just something that we're never going to explain.
Exactly.
But you might see other people getting sucked into, like, you know, the not hell.
Yeah,
place
this is a thing that might happen,
like,
on the other.
This is just like the Veil all over again.
Yeah. You know? Drop the oblivion.
Drop the oblivion. yeah. The most troubling part of this whole thing for me, and while I'm totally on, I'm with you there, Pam, that I am not okay with things just not being explained. Like, someone somewhere has to have some sort of explanation for what is going on and where what this oblivion thing is.
It's world building 101. You can't have something happen and then not explain it.
Yeah, like, you need to have some sort of explanation, even if it's just that, you know, something other than the other side existed. It's what existed before the other side. Nobody knows what it is because nobody's been there and come back. Like, you need someone to address that. And so hopefully they'll kind of do that, but I'm sure that'll be dealt with later. The most troubling aspect for me, though, is that Catherine is not, for me, the most evil of evils, that she should be singled out and taken away. Like, we've seen a lot of terrible characters, including Esther, who was willing to, you know, destroy her own children.
Mm-hmm. And Michael,
which,
and
right.
Cole.
Which
just
is
so many people.
A whole, and Silas, that there's definitely a double standard here. Like, for us, it seems so wrong that Catherine be singled out and sent to this dark oblivion thing when she had some legitimate reasons for being the horrible person she was.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, she, like, in my article, I explain why we humanize our villains of the Vampire Diaries, and I explained why we humanize Catherine, Damon, and Klaus. And all of them, every one of them, I think, is more of an anti-villain than an actual villain. Because an anti-villain is someone who basically has morals and is kind of like a good person in their core, but does horrible things to achieve their ends. And so I feel like that's Catherine, and she's a good person, but she may have done some bad things, but it's all for a reason, and she's kind of justified for, like, almost all of it. And so, like, if Catherine goes to this void, then, like, you can expect Damon to go there, you can expect Klaus to go there, probably all of the originals, and, like, what the heck? Like, why Catherine? You know? Like, who's judging this? Who is it up to? Like, why are you deciding that Catherine is the big baddie that goes to, like, this quote-unquote not hell?
You know? And I've seen a lot of people discussing, you know, the number of people she killed and how that's, you know, that's got to be some part of the reason that she's being sent there. But for some reason, I cannot justify her being taken to another, you know, another place by the number of bodies that you've tallied up on Earth.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like enough to merit her being sucked into a terrible, terrible, dark place forever.
Like, a vampire is, like, a predatory thing. It's going to kill. Like, that's what they do. That's, like, the, like,
instinct.
Instinct, exactly. And so, you can't just be like, oh, she killed over 100 people. Time for her to go to oblivion. Like, let's make that like a checkbox.
You passed the 1,000 souls murdered mark. Now you must be sucked into oblivion rather than going to the other side.
And there's so many vampires on the show that, like, kill people to get food. And Catherine and, like, the rest of the group might have used to have been these people, but, like, they've changed, and now, like, they don't feed on people to kill. Like, they feed on people to survive, you know? So, like, I don't know. It just, it pisses me off so much.
Yeah, it really, really angers me, too, because it just doesn't seem right, based on all of the things that Catherine did do right, and the humanizing they did of her character with Nadia in those last moments, and how beautiful she reacted to that and dealt with that. It just seems so wrong that we thank her for all of that character growth by torturing her for oblivion. Just seems wrong. That pretty much wraps it up. Did anybody have anything else from this episode you wanted to talk about?
No, I feel like we hit on all the points.
I think so too. It was a really great episode and a great send-off for three characters. It doesn't seem like we lost three characters this episode, but we did. And I'm sure that the next episode will have us in a tizzy, because there's sure to be all kinds of craziness going on, as there always is in Mystic Falls. Just a reminder, you guys can contact us and leave us feedback on Twitter at twitter.com/vampirehype, at vampirehypepodcast@gmail.com, and you can comment on any Vampire Diaries or Originals article or on the podcast post, and we will definitely see it and you know, interact and give you some answers if you have questions or anything, as best we can, that's for sure. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Kristen.
I'm Kyle.
And I'm Pamela.
Thanks, guys. See you later. Bye.
Open your mouth, boy. Show me your teeth. Show me what you got. Show me your teeth. Arr.